So, Richard, given that you mentioned ATC can see you and they should be able to react to you changing course, let me ask you this. There are few airports west of the Bravo on your way home, and you could potentially have an emergency with a fire at any moment. Why go west when you could just turn around, like you said, go back east, and there are plenty of options to land without declaring an emergency?
Yeah, I think that's my second option, is to turn around and exit the Bravo. But in this case, I feel like the situation is isolated with a fair amount of certainty. I don't see any other problems. I've isolated by turning off all my electronics. And the most predictable thing to do is just stay straight and level, steady speed, altitude, airspeed, heading, the whole thing, and exit the Bravo that way. And I'm counting on the controllers to be able to figure out, and predict that route.
Jeff, I think that we've got an abnormal situation here, not an emergency at this time. I don't think we have an emergency here. The situation is under control. It's abnormal, but I don't think it requires urgent action. Turning around, I think, would be a surprise to ATC. Who knows what's behind us, under us? I'd go with the option of continuing past the airport and then going direct destination. And I would think that's what ATC would expect. It's not an IFR clearance, but I would think the same rules would apply here.
So in that case, Bob, you're choosing option two. Yeah, once you're west of the approach, you're just heading straight for home. Okay.
Yeah, I think I would agree with Richard. The way I look at it is, I had a communication with ATC. They gave me a heading and an altitude to fly, and they lost all communication with me. And in that respect, I think predictability is the most important thing. Just like you were going to fly IFR, do what they think you're going to do. So for me, stay on the quickest path out of the Bravo. They don't know your altitude. They can see your heading from, the path of the airplane, and then just do as you were going to say. So I would really, as much as I hate to, I think I'd agree with Richard on this one.
I know how much that pains you.
That kills me.
Yeah, I agree with Richard. I do the same thing, and I would make a couple comments on on ATC from having researched this kind of thing a number of times for articles and video and reporting. Once you're west of the Bravo, you're dead to them. They really will forget about you, and you're on your own. And secondly, this kind of thing happens all the time. Airplanes lose communication, or they lose transponders in the Class B, and controllers are pretty much used to it, and they're able to go with the flow pretty quickly and shoo stuff out of the way. And once you're on emergency authority, you really do have carte blanche. There are just not really significant enforcement issues here. And that, I think, that should be stressed for people in this situation or like situations. Once you've established the plausible emergency for yourself, just do what you need to do.
I'm curious if there's anyone else who's with Bob and would make the turn, get home a little bit sooner, figuring, building off what you just said, Paul, once you're out of the Bravo, they just don't care. And if you're not a threat to another airplane, why go out of your way extra distance? Anyone else along with Bob on this one? Bob stands alone proudly.
I'd have to think about that because, again, you're not on an IFR clearance, so you're really on your own as to what you're going to do. The controllers can still see you on primary. The angular difference between having flown in that area a lot, the angular difference between 270 degrees for the relatively short distance to clear the Class Bravo and what would probably be maybe a 10 or 15 degree turn to the right to go direct to Eagle Creek isn't that great. And they're still watching you. If anything, from your position already north of the primary airport in the Class B, that puts you farther away from arrival and departures. So I don't think that's that big of a deal. And that being the case, I'd want to head home. A couple of caveats about that. First, there seems to be a cultural bias against declaring an emergency in any number of situations where we read after the fact that had the pilot done so, it may have made a difference. Now, the big difference, I think, in declaring an emergency is less getting ATC assistance. That's helpful, but it doesn't work in this case. But it's making a mental mindset adjustment for the pilot that I've got a heightened level of awareness here. So that would suggest maybe getting clear of the Bravo and then landing as soon as possible. However, and not knowing the Navion's got, I believe, an electrically driven hydraulic landing gear system. And I don't know if the flaps are hydraulic or electric. The point is, there's going to be some troubleshooting going on to see, well, am I going to have to manually extend landing gear? Am I going to be able to land with flaps? All of those sorts of thoughts. And frankly, the distance between Cincinnati and Eagle Creek, which is in the Indianapolis area, isn't that great. So it might take that long to go through your troubleshooting before it's time to land anyhow. So that's a long way of saying that I think I kind of agree with Bob. We'll get past the stadium, turn direct to Eagle Creek, which is pretty much what they expected anyhow. Had this been an IFR clearance, that's what we would have done because that's what we were told to expect. And troubleshoot your way home.
I want to build a little bit on what Bob said about this being an abnormal situation versus an emergency situation. Because as Richard pointed out, in a heartbeat, this could turn into a life-threatening, get on the ground as soon as possible emergency if you're wrong about something smoldering or burning inside this airplane. How is a pilot, particularly a younger pilot, say, less experienced, how do you weigh those two things and decide ones against each other? Because if, you know, prudence being the better side of caution here is just get on the ground and there's almost nothing between, you know, where you are right now and Eagle Creek, whether you go straight or not.
Well, first off, declaring an emergency, it's considered to be a very subjective thing, but really there's an objective way to look at it. If you are performing an action that is described in an emergency procedures checklist, you're in an emergency situation. So we've got an emergency. I'll be honest that my first thought of this scenario was to peel off to the right and land at Hamilton, Ohio, because it's just to my right and that's where my mother lives. So I know the place. Call my brother, come pick me up at the airport, and we're all cool. As far as declaring an emergency is concerned, we can't actually declare it except for ourselves. But that puts us in the mindset. We don't have, most of us in general aviation are not trained in a distinction between an abnormal and an emergency situation. It's just not the way we do it. Of course, that does exist in commercial aviation, in air carrier transport, and in military aviation. Maybe we need to think about training that distinction better to pilots in the civilian world.
And an instrument student once who was so bad that I told him to go ahead and declare the emergency after we got the IFR release. And this sort of reminds me that we make too much of a deal of fear of declaring an emergency. There's no downside to it. There's absolutely no downside. And all the enforcement actions we've reviewed that I can remember, I never saw anyone second guess on an emergency. There might be an emergency of your own making if you run out of gas or you get an ice or something like that, but even that's relatively rare. So I think the one thing out of this scenario is to be comfortable with the declaration, do it early when it's appropriate, and proceed in the safest possible manner. And don't worry about it from then on. Just worry about your own hide.
There's way too much worrying and going on here. I mean, this is not, you're talking about an abnormal situation or an emergency. This is not, this is just an inconvenient situation. I mean, this strikes me as so minor. I mean, I agree with Richard too. The right thing to do is to just be predictable, fly west, hold your altitude, get out of the airspace. I'm totally fine with that. I'm reminded of the other day I was driving with my son. Unlike his dad, he's a considerate guy. So we pull up to a four-way stop sign. We get there about the same time as another car. We've got the right of way, but my considerate son is trying to wave through the other driver because he's just being nice. And the other driver was a bit flummoxed because it's like, that's not what he was expecting. He saw that we had the right of way. And I was telling the kid, it's like, just do what they expect you to do. You know, here, LOSCOM, there's a procedure for this. Continue doing what you're doing, fly out of the airspace, go home and fix it. You know, talking about emergencies and, you know, hurry up and land and start diagnosing your hydraulic situation right now. It's like, you've got plenty of time for that. Just solve this minor inconvenience and party on.
Dave and I don't always agree, but in this case, I agree with Dave. This is an inconvenience. And I think it's important that you not react too quickly to the issue. Think about what you've got. You've got a bunch of considerations, some of which were mentioned by Tom. You know, how are you going to get the gear down? How about the flaps? How about communications at the destination? So there's a lot of things to consider here versus reacting impulsively to the situation. Think about what you've got. It's not an emergency in my mind. It's an abnormal situation, I would call it. I do agree with Dave that you could even call it an inconvenience at this point.
You know, Jeff, we have to be careful because on the one hand, we're advocating GA pilots not be afraid to declare an emergency and use that liberally, really, whenever it can provide them help. But in this case, I agree with Bob and Dave in that I want to think about what good is it going to do for me to declare an emergency? What help do I need? What help can it provide me? And in this case, the answer is really nothing. Now, if something popped again and I saw any kind of fire, you bet, you know, I would immediately declare it because now I seriously do have an emergency. But in this case, there's no need to declare an emergency because it's not going to get me anything.
So this is a little bit of a real world situation that happened. As many people know, my family owned a flight school for 50 years outside of Boston. We had 172s, 152s, 150s, and everything across the like. And over the 35 years that I was at the school, I can tell you there's a lot of interesting things that happened in our flight school. And one of them was we were sitting around the airport on a Saturday and got a phone call that one of our airplanes had landed in the marsh near Marshfield, Massachusetts, Cessna 152. And we said, what happened? Well, there was a fire in the cockpit. Okay. My brother and I got in a 172 and they said, it's right near the airport and it's stuck in the marsh. And we flew over there and we could see the airplane in 10 foot high marshy weeds, literally an eighth of a mile on the downwind to the runway at Marshfield. And we landed the airplane and then the fire department met us and we took a machete with the fire department and waded through seawater up to your ankles for this distance. And then finally, there's our airplane sitting in the marsh. There's a bunch of other firemen there. And when we got to the pilot, we asked him what happened. And he said, well, the transponder made some smoke and it stopped working. And in a panic situation, felt that it was better to put it in the marsh than in the runway, which was literally underneath his wingtip. And we had to get a helicopter, one of the big helicopters, to come and lift the airplane out, put it over on the airport, wash it off, put a new KT-76 transponder in, and fly it the 18 miles back to Hanscom Field. And so, again, smoke in the cockpit is an interesting thing in it, and it shouldn't be taken lightly at all. But I think to everybody's point is just fly the airplane first, shut the master switch off. Does it continue to occur, and not to make a situation out of one that's not there? So I think when you think about that, the guys are saying, "Oh, it's just an annoyance." Well, yeah, to you guys it might be just an annoyance, but to somebody with 50 or 75 or 100 hours, it's a scary situation, and that smell and the smoke in the airplane to them is an emergency. But what I would say is, in a situation like that, do your emergency procedure, take a deep breath, does it get worse, and then make your decision.
Significantly, and really to Michael's point, none of the options that were put forth was to put the airplane down on a highway or in a field or in the ballpark or anything like that at all. You're right in that this is not a situation where we need to make an emergency landing. Had the destination been farther away than Eagle Creek, then maybe you'd want to land short of destination. The reality is that's close enough that by the time you figured out what you would need to do with the flaps and gear and everything else to prepare for landing, you'd be almost there anyhow. So press on in this particular case.
Maybe we need phraseology to declare an inconvenience. I'm declaring an inconvenience. Let ATC figure that out.
Can I use that for a clearance I don't like, a reroute? You know, I'm declaring an inconvenience on this. This is my personal endurance is being stretched by the routing you just gave me. You know, listening to something Dave said earlier sort of puts this all in a little bit of context for me. When you were talking about your son at the intersection, as someone who has ridden a bicycle in traffic for over 20 years, I absolutely live and hopefully don't die on people doing what I expect them to do. You know, I hate it when somebody tries to wave me through an intersection when they got there first, because now nobody knows kind of what the rules are. So I deeply believe this idea of, yeah, do what people expect. But at the same time, I live and hopefully not die on the street by expecting an emergency at any moment and treating everyone like they could kill me, because I don't know what could happen in the next 30 seconds. And I'm sure Paul's alive after all his motorcycle time thinking partly the same way. And maybe that's a takeaway from this scenario, is that there's almost two ways to declare an emergency. There's declaring it to yourself in your head, which is an emergency, a mental emergency of priority. I have the right to do things that are not standard right now because of my health and safety and that of my passengers and that of the people around me, even in the system. And then there's the emergency action. I have the right. And now take a breath, as Michael said, do I need to execute any of those things? Or can I take a less drastic action and keep those emergency actions ready, even though I've queued them up for myself in my mind? And maybe that's kind of what we have here. It's serious. Take a breath. And maybe we can just continue.